Well, welcome. Today we're talking about family of origin and the impact that the family that we grew up in has on us as adults and has on our relationships and specifically has on our marriages. And I understand, you know, as we come into a room like this, we come from a whole plethora of backgrounds. Some of you came from really, really good families. And some of you, if you think back on your family of origin, that brings up actually some painful memories and even some hurts and some scars. And yet sometimes we enter into marriage and relationships thinking that the families that we came out of, that's in the past, that won't impact us now. I know when Karen and I got married, we came from very, very different family backgrounds. And our assumption was that, you know, all that's true, but we're us, we're now, and this is our family, and all that stuff doesn't matter and doesn't impact us. And boy, were we wrong. And have had and been able to process a lot of that in with each other and with counseling and stuff. And so today what we want to do is look at our families of origin. And the reason we think that this is so important to do as we are in this process of looking at marriage and relationships is because our family of origin really does impact who we are. And so we look at it today with the perspective that looking back at our family of origin is a valuable tool for us to learn, but not to blame. We're not here today to point fingers at our family of origin and say, see, it's your fault. This is why I'm all screwed up. It's your fault. But it is helpful for us to look back and go, okay, here's some things that my family did really, really well, and I hope regardless of what kind of a family you came from, as we get done today, you'll be able to, in some sense, appreciate the family that you came out of, maybe not for everything, but for specific things. But also to look at maybe some of the deficiencies that our families, things that they didn't do well or didn't do at all, and how that has impacted us, and some work that we might need to do now in light of the fact that we came into adulthood and came into marriage with some of those things from our family of origin. And so we start by looking at our family structure and realize that our family structure was designed by God. You know, if you think about humans are really the only animals in the animal kingdom that have very few, natural instincts. Most other animals in the animal kingdom are born imprinted with a set of genetic instincts that they automatically, as they grow up, know how to be a viable, healthy member of their species. Humans are not like that. Most of what we need to know as adults, and specifically in relationships, to be healthy and whole as humans and as adults, we have to learn along the way. And there was one institution, one group that God put together specifically for the purpose of building into humans as they grow up to give them the necessary tools and learnings that they need in order to be healthy, whole adult members of our species. And it's not the public school system, it's the family. The reason God put humans together in families the way he did is specifically for the sake of relationship and for the sake of young people growing up and being built into with the building blocks and the foundation of what they need to be healthy and whole and to have good relationships and subsequently good marriages along the way, all right? And so when we begin, you know, when we understand that God intended families and what God intended families to do for us as we grow up, we can begin to see the impact that our family's brokenness, and let's face it, all of our families are broken. I came from a great family, have wonderful parents, but they weren't perfect. Just because of our own sinfulness and brokenness and imperfection, none of us came from perfect families. And so all of our families have elements of brokenness, and we're just broken in different ways. And so one of the things to do is to look at the impact that our family's brokenness had on us and even continues to have on us to this day. And again, remind ourselves as we go through this, but it's not to blame. The point is not to point fingers back at the families that we came out of and say, you know, it's your fault. And so what I want to do tonight is I want to talk through three family stages that we go through in this process of becoming an adult. And a lot of times in Marriage Matters and Rebuilders, we look at a topic that comes from a book of somebody's, you know, kind of scholarly work on a specific topic, and we do that often. We're not going to do that tonight. Today, this topic, family of origin, is really just some thoughts as I've kind of thought back through, and some stuff that I think has been helpful for me and that I hope will be helpful for you as we process our families of origin. And so this doesn't come out of a book. This is just my thinking and my processing as we go through this, all right? So I want to look at three stages that I want to identify. And the first stage is our childhood, or what I'll call our reinforcing stage. And by the way, we're going to spend most of our time today on this one stage. And so if we get well into the teaching and you're thinking, holy cow, we are still on stage one, we're going to be here forever, just know that we're going to spend most of our time on stage one, and then we'll get through stages two and three following that, all right? When we look at the childhood stage, what I'll call the reinforcing stage, we understand that the family was meant to meet the basic needs of children growing up, all right? To teach them what it means to be, as I said, healthy and whole and functioning adults. But here's what we know is that when any of these needs in the childhood stage aren't met by the family, they create such a strong inner need that we tend to look outside the family to have these needs met. The children growing up are thinking, will somebody help me in this area? Because it's a felt emotional need. And that can be destructive if we begin looking outside the family to do for us things that God intended the family to do for us. And then we can move into adulthood, and sometimes to continue to look back to our family of origin to meet the needs that they no longer can or no longer should be meeting for us. And then that becomes dysfunctional and problematic, all right? And so because of what our families have sometimes failed to do for us, we bring that brokenness into our marriage and even into our subsequent parenting. And so what I want to do in this stage is to talk through 10 basic needs that I've identified that I believe that God intended to be met in the families that we grew up in. Again, this is not a complete list. I'm not saying these are the only 10. I'm just saying this is my list of stuff that I thought would be helpful for us to talk through as we go through the process of talking about the family of origin, right? So I'm just going to walk through those 10 needs and talk about some things as we go along. The first set of needs are just physical needs, basic food, water, shelter, transportation. And in our culture, most of us grew up with families who did this fairly well, mostly adequate. Most of us grew up with a roof over our head and clothes on our back and food. We didn't go through the day wondering where our next meal was going to come from. Okay, most of our families that we grew up in did this fairly well. Some of you may have grown up in really tough situations where these needs weren't taken for granted. They weren't necessarily met, and you did have to struggle through. And the impact that that had on you growing up, as well as it probably even has on you today, to have gone through childhood and had your, you know, even in question having your basic physical needs, food, water, clothing, shelter, met for you, okay? But the one thing that we recognize is that while God puts kids in a family so that those basic living needs, physical needs would be met, that doesn't necessarily buy us as parents more privilege. You know, it wouldn't be right for me to, you know, to say to my boys, and maybe you've heard this growing up, to say, you know, hey, who puts who puts food on the table and a roof over your head? You know, like somehow that buys me extra privilege with my kids, or buys me a level of respect because I provide these basic needs. No, it's just part of what it means to be in a family. It's just part of our responsibility as parents is to provide basic physical needs. Now, it's not supposed to continue into adulthood. And so as a parent of adult children, I'm not supposed to continue to be the one that provides for their basic physical needs, food and shelter and clothing, things like that. Or for us to look back to our parents, of our family of origin, and our parents as adults, for us to look to our parents to be responsible for meeting our basic needs. We're supposed to be on our own to do that. And I've talked to, you know, a number of families that, you know, it becomes, you know, very problematic and dysfunctional. I know of a family who had a son who was in his 40s, and they were still supporting him financially, providing for him financially. And it bothered them. And yet they felt like they were stuck in a rut. I remember one time talking to a father who had a son who I think was in his late 20s and had gone through divorce, had gone through just some challenges in his life. And the father was paying his rent. And the son was working but not working full time, needed to be working. And the dad just kind of kept supporting him. And I remember talking, and the dad was really struggling with this. I remember the dad sitting in my office and saying, I feel like I shouldn't be doing this. But but if I don't pay his rent, and I mean, I think I asked the question, well, what happens if you just make him on his own and make him come up, figure out how to pay his own rent? And he goes, my fear is that he would be living in his car. And I can't imagine, you know, seeing my son homeless and living in his car. And my response to that was, you know, maybe that's part of his story. You know, imagine his story 15 years from now where he's able to say, you know, I went through a period in my life where I was really struggling and I got divorced and I wasn't working and I ended up living in my car. But then let me tell you what I did. And then he begins to tell the story about he and God and how he moved out of that, how God moved him out of that situation and where he is now. I said, what, that actually becomes a great part of his story, as opposed to him being 15 years from now saying, yeah, I'm still getting by because my dad's still paying my rent. And one of the things that's a challenge for us as parents is to recognize that one of the most loving things that we can do for our kids is to not continue to support them as adults. We have a 25-year-old son who fortunately is back here in town, and we get to see him a lot. We have a great relationship with him. And I understand, because it's hard as a parent, because I see that, you know, he's just getting started and money's really, really tight. And, you know, there's a part of me that would just love to help him out, you know, and bless him and, you know, give him some money here and there and just to make things easier, because I, you know, I have some margin in my finances and he's really struggling. But I know that he needs to make it on his own. And so I understand the dilemma as a parent of wanting to help, but recognizing that as an adult, he really needs to go through some challenges and to figure out how to make it on his own. And so, you know, if you're in a situation or we're in a situation where as adults and you're in a marriage and you're still looking to your parents to meet your basic expenses and money for basic physical needs and expenses, that's going to have an impact on your marriage. It's going to have an impact on you personally, and it's going to have an impact on your marriage. So the first set of needs are physical needs. The second set of needs that I think God intended for kids to grow up in a family that met are safety needs. That you would grow up in a home where your home is a safe place. And where, especially where your family is a safe place. And when you think about when you were a kid growing up and something traumatic happened and, you know, maybe you felt bullied at school or, you know, you broke up with your boyfriend and were going through just some emotional trauma, or you failed a test and, you know, you felt like you wanted to talk to somebody. The question is, where did you run? Was your mom and your dad, was your family the safest place for you to go with those kinds of things? Or does even that thought kind of make you laugh and go, no, my family was probably the least safe place for me to take concerns like that. Well, if that was true for you, then that's a problem. That's an issue. Because I think, no question, God intended for us to grow up where our parents and our home were the safest people and the safest place in our life, where there was no fear of emotional or physical or verbal abuse, where we knew that we would be treated honorably and not teased and made fun of, and where people take responsibilities for their actions, and where they don't blame each other. You know, they did a survey a while back and found that the two things that kids need to hear most from their parents are, number one, I love you, the words I love you, not just, well, I know they love me, but to actually hear it and to hear it often. And the second is to hear the phrase, I'm sorry. And maybe you hadn't thought about that, but kids long for their parents to be real and to be vulnerable and to take responsibility. And, you know, one of the most important things that I could do growing up, and I ended up having to do this quite a bit because I messed up a lot, was to sit with my boys and just say, you know what, I'm really sorry. Not, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm sorry I yelled at you, but you shouldn't have done that. Because whenever we add the word but, we're basically just negating everything that we said up to that point and rationalizing it. But to get down on my knees sometimes where I was eye to eye, face to face with them and say, you know what, I lost it back there and I yelled at you and I'm really sorry. I was wrong. I should not have done that. And you deserve better from a dad than what you got from me. And I just want you to know I'm really, really sorry. And, you know, And I think our fear of doing that is that somehow we'll lose credibility with our kids. That I will say to my son, you know, what I did back there was wrong and I'm really sorry. That he'll go, oh, I'm glad you see it. You are such a loser. My dad even admits now that he's such a loser. But you know what? That's not what happens. That when we take responsibility and we admit fault and we tell our kids, I'm sorry, not only do we model that for them, but what they see in us is that humility, and actually their esteem of us goes up a few notches. And so the question is, did you grow up in a home where your parents took responsibility? Did your parents tell you that they loved you? Did they demonstrate it? But then did you hear the words, I love you? And if you didn't, what impact has that had on you? And did your parents take responsibility? Did you hear your parents saying, I'm sorry? Or was it always, I'm sorry, but? And so if you grew up in a home that was not a safe place, we also, as adults now, have a harder time creating a marriage and a home that is a safe place. There's a word that psychologists are using these days called homeostasis. And homeo basically meaning the same, and stasis meaning stasis. Actually, stasis means in a state of. And so homeostasis is things staying in a state of staying the same. And I remember one time early on when Karen and I were early married, we'd just been married, I think, a couple of months, and we were doing some stuff with a marriage counselor, and that was really, really helpful, especially as we looked back at our families of origin. And I remember this one instance. I honestly don't even remember what we were arguing about, but somehow things just blew up, and we were yelling and arguing over something. And the next thing I know, Karen was just, she just went out the door and slammed the door and drove away. And that was never how we would have dealt with something in my family. And so I was like blown away. I couldn't imagine what had just happened. And I thought she had just left me. And so I went to a friend's house and I was crying. I said, my wife, we just got married and now she's left me. And I just envisioned, her never coming back. And so, he kind of calmed me down. And I went back home and I waited. And eventually she drove back home and she came in. And I'm expecting that as soon as she walks in the door, we're going to kind of have to really process this through. And she walks in and like nothing had ever happened. And I said, whoa, where did you just go? You just left me. She said, I didn't leave you. I went to the grocery store. And that ended up being a topic of conversation the next time we met with the counselor. And as he began to help us kind of dissect out what was going on, one of the things that he asked Karen was, okay, what was happening right before you guys blew up? She said, actually, things were going really, really well. And she kind of described it. And then she says, I'm not sure what happened. And he said, let me make an observation. And he said, Karen, you grew up in a home that you have described as very chaotic. It was loud, a lot of yelling, and chaos was just normal. And he said, you hated it, and you vowed that you would never have a home like that. But here's what you need to say. Chaos in the home that you grew up in was homeostasis. That's what you were used to. Doesn't mean you liked it, but you learned to function in it. And he said, and then you get married, and things are very, very different with Gordy. And things are going along really, really well, the way you would hope things would go. He said, but that's out of the norm for you. That's not what you grew up learning to function in. And he said, so as much as you didn't like the chaos that you grew up in, it was comfortable for you. And he said, so I think there's a chance that when things are going well, you sabotage it to create chaos, not because you like chaos, you hate chaos, but because you know how to function in it, and it feels normal for you. And that was hugely helpful for us as we began to process. So the question is, what was the home like that you grew up in? What was homeostasis for your family? And how have you found yourself maybe even sabotaging situations or recreating some of the chaos that you grew up in, not because you like it, but because it's familiar. And maybe some of you have had marriages that are very similar to your parents' marriages. Again, not because that was a good model, but it's homeostasis. It's what you know. All right. So let's move on. The third set of needs then that kids grow up in a family are relational needs, that God intends for us to grow up as kids in a home where we were loved unconditionally, where you were loved and accepted just for who you are. And this is especially important and true as an infant and as a toddler and in your elementary school years, where you are just loved on by your parents, where you get this overwhelming sense that you are loved and cared for just for who you are and unconditionally, regardless of how you act or what you do. And so as you grow up in a family where people, your parents, have literally poured themselves into you relationally. And that begins to fill up this relational tank that we have as people. And then as we move into our, you know, pre-adolescent years and our teenage years, where there's something in us that wants to venture out and have friendships and relationships outside of our family, and it's a very normal process of growing up. But we move into that period, I think the way God intended it, having been filled up relationally so that we can begin to venture out and to give ourselves relationally to other people in a healthy way, all right? But the problem is, if our parents haven't done that and built into us unconditionally, relationally growing up, that we enter into our teenage years and venture out in a relationship with some void there relationally and longing to have our relational needs met. And so we begin looking outside the family to have needs met for us that God intended to be met at home. And, and that's where things like jealousy creep in and clingy friendships. And actually, the introduction of sex into friendships and relationships is often the result of entering into adolescence with some neediness relationally. And if you think about, you know, some of the study that's been done on gangs and gang life in our inner cities, almost everyone who joins a gang joins for one reason. And the reason is belonging, to have a sense of belonging to something, to a group of people, to a family. And so the void that is left that would cause somebody to want to go down that path towards belonging to something like a gang is a void that was left at home where God intended people to be built into relationally. And this means, God intended you to grow up in a family where your relational needs were being met, but God did not put you into a family to meet the relational needs of your parents. I hear some parents say, my goal is just, I want to be my child's best friend. Well, I'll tell you what I told my sons when they were growing up. I said, I'm not big on being a best friend. In fact, my goal is not to be your best friend. My goal is to be your dad. And if I can do that well, by the way, having a good dad is way better than having a best friend. And so sometimes, just because of the situation that parents are in, adults are in, if they come into a family, relationally needy, they can sometimes look to their kids to meet their relational needs, which God never intended them to, and then that becomes dysfunctional and problematic. If you came from a family where there was divorce, if you came from a broken family, you may have come from, if you came from a place where your parents got divorced, then what you have is you have two adults, your parents, who at one point were in love with that other person more than any other person on the planet. They devoted their life to that person, and then somewhere along the way, something happens, and then they break up. That relationship goes south, and so it would be natural for them to feel tremendous rejection because the one person that they counted on the most, that they loved the most, now they've turned their back on that person, and so there is this hole has been torn in their heart. And so they feel tremendously rejected, and it can be kind of automatic for them to turn to their kids in the midst of this rejection to look to their kids for some level of acceptance or for some level of lovability. They feel unloved by their spouse, their ex-spouse, and now they're looking for somebody to validate their lovability as a person, and they can often look to their kids to do that, which God never intended for kids to meet those needs of parents. And so if you grew up in a family where your parents were divorced, you may have found yourself caught with parents who were trying to have those needs met, sometimes looking to you to meet those. And then you get parents who have already experienced the loss of the most significant relationship that they've ever had, and now they live with a greater fear of other loss. And if you're a child of theirs, now their fear is, rational or not, is of losing you. And so now you've got, if you grew up in a situation where you were with one parent during the week and another parent over the weekend or however that worked, you're living with your parents in two different locations, kind of two different families, and parents who are living with this fear of losing you too, parenting begins to change, and often it begins to slack off because nobody wants to be seen as the bad parent. And so discipline begins to slack off, and they get to stay up late when they're at their dad's house, and I'm the one making them go to bed early. And so, I don't want to be the bad guy. And money's really, really tight following a divorce, usually on both sides of the equation. And, they have an Xbox and all the toys, at one parent's house, and I don't want them to rather be with that parent because they have all the toys. So even though I can't afford that stuff, I figure out a way to buy that stuff and have it here and live on credit just so that my kids can. And so we begin to shower kids materially with things, and discipline begins to slack off often just simply out of that fear of loss of the child to the other parent. Even if your parents weren't divorced, but you grew up in a home where there was a lot of marital conflict and a lot of yelling between your parents, you may have often found yourself caught in the middle and feel like, when the fights and the yelling, that you're kind of caught in the middle. Maybe you're trying to gloss things over or, kind of smooth things over for the parents because you don't like to see them yelling and fighting. And so you felt this responsibility to make them fight less, or maybe you had kind of talked yourself into the idea that they're fighting because it's your fault. Maybe you even have had a parent who blamed you for their fighting, which was, absolutely inappropriate because it wasn't your fault. They're grown-ups. They need to learn how to act, and it's not the kid's fault that they do anything. And so, but you may have been either told or led yourself to believe that you were the cause of their problems. And a lot of times we see parents looking to their kids then to validate that what their ex-spouse is doing or what the other parent is doing is wrong. And so you see themselves, telling the kids, well, let me explain to you what's going on. And that's always couched in kind of spinning the story to make the other person look bad and to make me not look so bad. But just to say, to get the kids in the middle of that and to have them somehow have to feel like they've got to make things better or understand, it's not their job. It's not the job of the kids to somehow come in between and fix things to validate that what one parent is doing is right, what the other parent is doing is wrong. Kids should not be caught in the middle of that or asked to somehow make a judgment on that, okay? And sometimes that's, camouflaged in this idea of going, well, I want them to know the truth. Well, that's just a bunch of baloney. Because if you think about it, kids are great discerners of the truth. The truth will always prevail, and kids are actually very discerning of what's actually going on. And so it's often the parent saying things to the kids. It's more about, not wanting them to take the other person's side and not wanting them to think that I'm a bad parent or a bad person, all right? So, maybe that's a situation that you grew up in. And because those needs were not met for you as a child, those relational needs were not met for you as a child, to the degree that by adulthood that your relational tank was full and that you were ready to give to others, and specifically getting to a marriage so relationally healthy and so relationally full that you're now able to be in a position to give yourself relationally to a spouse. Because we've talked about that. At its very core, marriage is about giving yourself. And if you enter into a marriage with any deficiency in relational neediness, that's a terrible way to build a marriage. And you probably have run into why that becomes problematic. And so some of you have found yourself in marriages, or maybe marriages that you came out of, where you were more needy in relationship than as other-centered as spouses and even as parents as you need to be, all right? So that's relational skills. Then the fourth set of skills, that we grow up with in a family are social skills. And this is just, some of the basic stuff, like how to, give a good firm handshake and how to do proper introductions to meet somebody else and, which fork to use when you go out to a nice restaurant, and just things that you know, are helpful to know growing up, that really the place that you learn those things is in a family. Have you ever met a, you know, like a young person, a child who just is overly polite? I mean, everything is yes, sir, yes, ma'am, thank you very much, you're welcome, you know, please, may I do that? You know, all those, that you just kind of are stunned and go, man, this kid is just so polite. Well, where do you think they got that? You know, some kids aren't just genetically polite. They learn that. They learn that from the family that they grew up in. And so a lot of times, if you grow up in very, very different families from your spouse, and social skills are very, very different. Maybe one of you grew up and you ate around the family dinner table, you know, every night for dinner. And there were, you know, there were rules of etiquette around passing food and asking for things to be passed and, you know, all those kinds of things. And maybe the other one of you grew up in a family that very seldom even ate together, you know. And, you know, your mom would call you for dinner and you'd all run to the car. And when you ate, you often ate with the TV on and maybe food on your lap or TV trays or something like that. And so you come into marriage with very, very different picture of even socially how your family is going to react. And so those are things that you need to kind of process. And they can become areas of conflict for you just out of the different social skills that you grew up with, all right? The fifth set of needs that we grew up in, we grew up in a family, I think God intended you to grow up in a family where your uniqueness is celebrated. I mean, clearly God has made every single one of us differently. And we grow up in families. And if you've had, you know, if you've had multiple kids yourself, you understand that even kids that grow up that are genetically, you know, biologically linked, the same DNA, same environment, same house growing up, but they're very, very different kids, that everybody, every one of us is wired differently. And I think God intended for you to grow up in a family that recognized your uniqueness, called it out, and then celebrated it. Because we all have some things that we do naturally well and some things that we're not so good at, all right? And I think God intended you to grow up in a family, whether this happened or not, where your parents were thrilled with you just the way you are, and encourage you to develop, you know, the natural wiring that God put in you. And I see so many kids today, they're growing up, and it seems like they're being exploited for their parents' benefit. You know, of a parent that, you know, longs for a child to be a sports star or to be musical or to be in theater or whatever that is, or to be the star student. And not that it's not good to work on those things, but I sometimes see parents pushing their kids in one direction or another. And, you know, and you can just see when you look at it, it seems like it's more for the parents' benefit than it is for the kids. And so the question is, did you grow up in a home that celebrated the difference and then recognized the difference and then celebrated? I remember when my boys were younger, Grayson is about 6 years younger than Tyler, and I remember, so I would drive them to school every day, and I remember being in the car one day, and Tyler is a voracious reader, and he was, you know, even by the time he was in kindergarten, he's reading chapter books and novels, and it was just this amazing reader. Grayson was much more physical, he was much more athletic and physically inclined. And I just remember one day riding in the car, taking them to school, and I kind of glance in the rearview mirror, and Tyler's in the back seat, and he's reading a novel on the way to school. And I think this is, you know, probably like second grade, third grade, something like that. And Grayson is in his car seat. He was still in a booster seat. Tyler's reading a book on the way to school. And Grayson kind of looks around and glances over at Tyler. And then he just says out loud to nobody in particular, he just said, "I'm not much of a reader. Because I guess I'm more of a sports kind of a guy myself." And I thought, you know what? He nailed it. They're very, very different. And so our job as parents is to recognize that and to call it out and to celebrate it. And so the question is, did you grow up in a family that did that? Letter F, then God intended for you to grow up in a family that would instill confidence in you, in who you are and who God made you to be. You know, if a family reinforces who we are as being just the way that God intended us to be, the way that we're supposed to be, we begin to develop confidence. When you and I feel like we can take risks, that we can even fall flat on our face, that when we come home, that we come home to a family that's safe and accepting, And, you know, even though we failed, they're going to pick us up and say, but you're okay. When we grow up in a family like that, we just naturally develop confidence. I remember growing up and my parents, I remember hearing over and over and over from my parents. They would just say, Gordy, you know, you're smart and you're sharp and you're articulate and, you know, you're good relationally. That, you know, the sky's the limit for you. There's nothing that you can't do if you set your mind to it. And I grew up, and I don't know that I believed that about myself, but I believed that my parents believed that about me. And so in that, I began to develop confidence in who I am as a person. And so I'm grateful for that. The next set of needs that God intends for us to learn as in our family growing up is discipline. Not just punishment, because punishment on its own just teaches me to avoid punishment. If I get punished every time I don't clean my room, I'm going to clean my room just to avoid the punishment. And then what happens when I go away to college or get my own apartment where suddenly there's no punishment hanging over that? I have never learned the discipline of why to keep a room clean and picked up. Discipline, by definition, is teaching me to make good decisions regardless of how I feel about it. Discipline is doing the right thing regardless of how I feel. And so exercise is a discipline. We exercise and we eat right. We make a decision. It's a discipline. We make a decision to do the right thing regardless of how we feel at the time. And so we grow up in a family where we have shared responsibilities. And everybody has their own chores to do. And part of that is just learning the discipline of we all pitch in, we all do something, regardless of how you, it doesn't matter whether you feel about it, whether you feel like it, you know, mowing the lawn or taking out the trash, whatever your job is. It's not, you know, well, I'm sorry, you don't feel like doing it today. It's your job. And that's just, you know, a part of life. Discipline also teaches me the relationship between actions and consequences. That there are consequences for things that I do, both good and bad. And I need to learn that adequately in a family. I need to grow up in a family that deals with actions and consequences in a consistent way and in a predictable way so that I know that if I do what my parents told me not to do, I can be pretty well assured of what's going to happen and that it's going to happen that way every single time. And in that, I learn the consistency and the predictability of actions and consequences, and that will serve me well as an adult in the workplace. Things like if I show up late to work all the time or if I don't get my work done, I've learned as a child growing up that there are appropriate consequences for those actions, and I can pretty much expect them that way every single time. And so if you grew up in a home where discipline and you know consequences for actions was not predictable and it was not, there was not consistency across the board and consistency from one parent to another. That one of the things that is so important in a family growing up is that our parents are on the same page. And so my dad doesn't let me get away with stuff when mom's not there because that impacts my understanding of discipline and it impacts my relationship with both of them. But that my parents are in agreement of what the consequences are and the predictability of that being the same every single time. And so if you grew up in a home without discipline or with, inconsistency or, you know, lack of predictability of discipline, that probably has led to problems for you in your marriages, in your relationships. And my guess is if you're dealing with problems now or in a previous marriage, because of the lack of discipline that you grew up in, you probably have problems in your marriage that you have attributed to your ex-spouse and thought, well, you know, it's their fault. Just because without discipline, we tend to think of it that way. All right. Then letter H, boundaries. I think God put you in a family to grow up to learn appropriate boundaries, that you would live in a home where boundaries were identified and modeled well. And where boundaries are a positive thing. This is not, setting limits on things that you can't do, but it's defining the good aspects of who we are as a family and who you are as a person and putting boundaries around that. One of the things that I remember growing up is that my family always had we ate, this is kind of old-fashioned, but we ate dinner together every night as much as possible, every night of the week. Then the kitchen table. We'd all sit down at the kitchen table, and sometimes it was late because kids weren't home from sports practices yet. But as much as we could, my mom and dad tried to have a sit-down meal with us every single night. So there's kind of a boundary around that. You couldn't just come in and say, I've got homework, I'm not going to eat tonight. It was like, no, sit down, you're going to eat. This is what we do. And then on Sunday, we all sat around the dining room table. So mom got out the good china and the good silverware. And after church, we'd come home and we'd have a pretty big meal around the dining room table. Now, as a teenager, you know, you can eat pretty fast and be done, but that had nothing to do with it because the rule was, the boundary was, this is family dinner on Sunday. And so we sit there until my parents say that we're done. And that can often be frustrating. I remember one time in the fall, it was a beautiful fall afternoon, and I was, you know, probably in high school, and I'm done eating my part, but we're still sitting there talking, and my parents are still drinking coffee and all those things that drive kids crazy. And the doorbell rings, and my dad goes and answers the door, and it's a couple of my friends that want to know if I can come out and play football. And it was a beautiful day to come out and play football, and when we played football, we played in my yard, so it was appropriate that they came to my house. And they said, can Gordy come out and play? And my dad said, well, he can, but not yet. And I'm like rolling my eyes going, oh, no. He said, we're still eating dinner, which to me, my thought was, I'm not still eating, but that was not what he meant. And he said, this was really interesting. He said, you're welcome to come in and join us. And if you're hungry, we still got some food for you. And then when we're done as a family, Gordy can come out. And so they came in and actually joined us. But there was a pretty clear boundary for us around that as a family. And so in that, as a child, I learned to set appropriate boundaries and to build my life with healthy relational and family boundaries, okay? And so to not learn that, to grow up in a home that didn't set really good, healthy boundaries, you grow up and then that has a huge impact on your marriage and your family. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to take the topic, this is such an important topic, we're going to spend an entire session looking at the topic of boundaries and relational boundaries for us. So don't miss that. Letter I, then, is sexuality. We learn the basics of sexuality from the family that we grew up in. And this is not just the, you know, the birds and the bees talk, the talk about, you know, sex, but the health of our view of sexuality is really developed by the kinds of relationships that we have at home. And so a healthy sexuality is built on healthy relationships at home, okay? In fact, almost everyone who struggles as adults in the area of their sexuality or acts out in the area of their sexuality can be traced back to factors in their family of origin. Some of you were probably and undoubtedly in a room like this have suffered sexual abuse, whether verbal or physical, and I can't tell you how much that pains me and how sorry I am that you had to endure that and go through that. And maybe you experienced sexual abuse, verbal or physical, at home, and how that has traumatized even what we're talking about today in the family of origin. Some of you experienced sexual abuse outside the home, but there was something in you that, even if your parents didn't know about it, there was something in you that felt like my parents didn't protect me from this, that I was supposed to be protected from this kind of thing happening, and they failed me, even if they weren't aware of that. Now, when it comes to developing a healthy sexuality and what's built into us at home, for both boys and girls, you know, watching how mom and dad interact and how mom and dad treat each other is important for that. Not watching mom and dad have sex, okay? So if you're one of those that you happen to walk in on your mom and dad one time when they were having sex, and now you're, you know, years and years, decades later, are still trying to figure out how to erase that image from your head, that's not what we're talking about. But just healthy interaction between a husband and a wife, between your mom and dad, actually builds a basis of an understanding for what healthy, you know, servant-oriented, other-centered sexuality is between a man and a woman and a husband and a wife. You learn appropriate modesty in the house that you grew up in, hopefully. That there's, you know, that there's nothing wrong with our human body. There's nothing, and this is a modesty without shame. There's nothing about your body that you should be ashamed about. But there are parts of our body that should stay hidden. And for modesty's sake, not for shame's sake. And there will come a time, a person in your life, hopefully, that you will fully give your body to. But until then, it's something that is really intended to be kept private and modest, okay? Now, when it comes to both to boys and girls, there's a little bit of a difference. For boys, develop a healthy, appropriate emotional bonding with their mom. So the relationship that a boy has with his mom growing up is really, really important, and it creates some of the basis for understanding emotional bonding. But then with his dad, it is so critical, a boy's relationship with his dad growing up, because his dad defines for him masculinity and defines for him manhood. And hopefully a dad is intentional about this and sits his son down and talks him through manhood and what that means and what masculinity, true godly masculinity means. But if nothing is ever said, the boy learns what about sexuality and manhood and masculinity from just watching his dad. And that could be good. It could be very, very negative as well. And I think God intended for a boy to learn from his dad that manhood is not about conquest. It's not about power. That sexuality is actually about, for a man, it's actually about initiating and sacrificing and serving. And then that would be modeled in how, for me with my boys, that would be modeled in how I treat their mom. That they would see me treat her and serve her, open the door for her, and how I talk to her and how I help her and things like that. For girls then, it's a little bit different. Because for girls, their relationship with their mom often is the place where, some of the plumbing questions get answered about, female reproduction and the whole system and, menstruation and all those kinds of things that go along with that. But then a girl's relationship with her dad actually defines her sexuality. And a healthy relationship with her dad is essential for a girl to grow up with a positive sexual image of who she is as a woman and confidence in that and then the value that her dad places on her as a young woman and on her body and on her purity and on her virginity is all transferred to her and how she views herself, okay? So, a dad who, even when she's going through significant physical changes in puberty and the body is maturing and beginning to look more woman-like, that she doesn't experience, teasing from her dad about that or an awkwardness from her dad about that, but that her dad just kind of celebrates with her how beautiful a woman she is becoming. And she sees how respectful her dad is of her privacy and how that changes even as she's going through puberty. And how he esteems her purity and her beauty and her virginity. And she begins to instills in her those qualities about herself. In fact, when you study and look at the entree of premarital sex for a girl, and especially when you look at promiscuity, the presence of promiscuity in a girl or a young woman almost always traces back to the lack of a relationship, or certainly the lack of a healthy relationship with a dad. And maybe that's, there could be all kinds of reasons for that. Maybe in her acting out sexually, she's looking for a father figure. It probably is more due to just the lack of self-esteem that she has and her value as a woman that only a father can really instill in her, okay? And so, fast forward into adulthood and marriage, so many couples who struggle sexually in their marriages relate that back to their family of origin, to their childhood. Again, not to blame, not to point the finger and say, okay, this area of my life is their fault, but to acknowledge and then to do something about that, to say, I've got some work to do in this area. I understand better now where that came from. But what am I going to do now moving forward so that I can move towards the kind of health that God intended for me to have all along? And then the 10th set of needs that God intends for us to grow up in a family is understanding of our faith. The basic building blocks for a faith and an understanding of who God is, God intends to happen from within the family. In fact, if you think about the language in the Bible about who God is and about our faith, is all family-based language. It talks about God and refers to him as our heavenly Father. not a dictator, not a ruler, but God, the Bible, and God gives us this image that he is like a heavenly father. And his hope is that we would have grown up in a family with a wonderful father and a healthy view and relationship with our father, that when God says, I am like a heavenly father, and again, this is not a gender thing. God is not male. God doesn't have a gender. But he's talking about the relationship, that I would see God as a heavenly father, and right away that would bring with it some understanding and hopefully some positivity of a relationship with an earthly father that then equates to the kind of relationship that God wants me to have with him as a heavenly father. But if you have little or no or a poor relationship with your earthly father growing up, that really impacts your ability to understand who God is and who God wants to be in your life, okay? We talk about, our relationship with Christ. And Jesus says that the closest analogy that we have of what it means to be in a relationship with him is a marriage relationship, where he calls himself the bridegroom and calls us the bride. The bridegroom who offers himself in relationship to the bride and then waits for her response, and then the two entering into an eternal covenant relationship, an unwavering, unbreakable relationship. And yet, is that what most of us have seen in marriage modeled out for us while we were growing up? This unwavering, eternal relationship. And I understand, those of you that have been through divorce, the pain of that, and you never intended, you never thought that would happen to you, and you never intended for that. I get that that's incredibly painful. I don't want to discount that at all. But at the same time, we grow up in a culture that sometimes holds marriage up and says it's something you try for a while, and if it doesn't work, you're free to leave that and go try something else. And that is not at all the way God wants us to understand our relationship with Christ. And then we talk about community and fellowship, and often use the phrase the family of God, that our understanding of community is often built on the foundation of a good family, an understanding that we would grow up with of what a good family is, all right? Got ahead of myself here. So that's the end of that. So the first stage that we grow through is kind of the reinforcing stage. All the things that God intended to build into you while you were growing up in a family, and the question is, did that family do for that for you, or do you enter into adulthood with some deficiencies, all right? Then the second stage that I'll talk about happens in kind of late teen, early adulthood, and it's the releasing stage. And at its very core, this is about decision making, that you get to a point. I think God intended for everybody to get to a point in their family where they're ready to move on their own into adulthood. And it wouldn't just kind of happen. It wouldn't happen because the kids decide, I'm tired of this and I'm moving out. And so there's kind of this painful, but it would happen as much a celebration of everything else that happens in a family, that you would get to a point, and I think what God intended for you is that you get to a point, at some point between age, 18 or 25, or sometimes when it's associated with marriage, different families do it different ways, but that your parents would sit you down and in some sense have a ceremony or a celebration that would just somehow say to you, we love you so much, and we are so proud of you, and who you, the man or the woman that you have grown into. And we're doing this now because we are now releasing you into adulthood. And you are on your own. And we're gonna be your greatest cheerleader. And we're gonna be for you, and we'll be behind you. But from this point on, everything changes. Because from this point on, you make all of your own decisions as an adult. And we're gonna do our best, although we know it'll be hard for us to, we're gonna do our best to not try and influence your decision-making, but to let you make decisions and to let you fail at times with your decisions and not try and rescue you or keep you from making bad decisions. I love giving my opinion, and so if you ask me for my opinion, I'm sure I'll gladly give my opinion to you about a decision, but I will always try and remind you, but it's your decision, and I will back you in whatever you decide. And that our kids would feel, that you would feel, that your parents have kind of celebrated you into adulthood, and at the same time, they've intentionally identified what their role is going to be. We said to our son, when a few years ago, we had this conversation with our oldest son, and said, we're so proud of you. And our relationship will change now. We will always be your parents. And we love that God gives us that ability to do that. We will always be your parents, but we will no longer parent you. You are now an adult, and we're going to have a different kind of a relationship. We hope it's a rich, wonderful relationship, but the relationship needs to change. And if you did not grow up in a family that did that for you, then in some sense, you had to what's called self-release. You had to kind of separate away from your family, even though they may have been trying to keep that sense of influence and control, and you know how awkward and hard that was. I have some good friends here in town who went through this a number of years ago. Great family, and her parents are wonderful people. I know them very, very well, and they adore her. They adore their kids, and she and her husband were newly married, and her dad, because they love them so much, would come over, and one time I think she said that, you know, they mentioned that their washing machine had gone out, and they needed to save some money and get their washing machine fixed. And next day they came home from work, and their dad had come in and installed a brand new washing machine for them. And he loved to do that kind of stuff. And at one point they actually realized that their family, their parents, out of their love for them, were still trying to parent them. And they had to have a very difficult conversation with her parents and say, we love you, but we need to be on our own. We need you to not parent us and not step in and rescue us and tell us what we should do and those kinds of things. And it was very painful for her parents. And they went through a process. But once they got on the other side of it, they had a great relationship going forward. And so if you were not released by your parents, you may need to have that kind of a conversation with your parents. Because if you are in a marriage or were in a marriage, you understand the impact of that on a marriage when you are trying to have a marriage where you are your own new family, and yet there's parents out here that are still trying to influence your decision making, that not only is difficult for you, but it also is very, very troublesome for the marriage. That's why that familiar verse in Genesis, you've probably heard it at weddings or heard before, where it says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. The oneness that God intends for us to experience in marriage, the newness of a new family, is really dependent on what it starts, that a man will leave his father and mother. And one version says, and a woman leave her home. That there is a leaving that must happen from the other family in order to come together and experience the oneness in marriage that God wants us to have. And then finally, the third stage is in adulthood, what I'll call the redefining stage. And this is where, having been released, we begin to identify who our family is. And again, it's around decision-making. And so this has just been kind of the way my mind tends to think about it. There's a circle. And this is who your family is. And it's you. You're in the circle. And that's it. If you, if you're a follower of Christ, then Christ is in your life. He's also in your circle. And that maybe that's the total of how you define family at this point. If your parents are still alive, if your grandparents are around, if you've got siblings, if you have adult children, they're all outside the circle. And this is where a lot of people run into problems. Because if any of these people are still inside the circle, where they're still trying to attempt to influence your decision-making or you're attempting to influence their decision-making, there's conflict and there's confusion. And you need to understand that the way this is, that God intended is for you to have hopefully great relationships with these people. But they're not in your immediate family. Again, the line defines decision-making. If you're married, then your spouse is in your circle, okay? But again, everybody else stays outside the circle. If you've got kids, not adult kids, but kids still at home and who should still be at home, they're in your circle, okay? But that's it, and that's your circle. Now, if you are divorced, then you understand that now it gets even more complicated because now you've got an ex-spouse who's no longer in your circle. They've got their own circle, but there's overlap, especially if you've got kids still at home, because now here's what happens. Your kids are no longer just in your circle. They're also in somebody else's circle. which means there's a part of their life that you don't have influence over all the decisions that are made by them or for them. And you do when they're with you, and hopefully you have a great relationship with your ex-spouse where you can kind of make sure that the decision-making is the same in both circles, but undoubtedly it's not always going to be, and that can be very, very painful. But to recognize that it is that way and it needs to be that way. A lot of people get into a lot of consternation and fights and trouble over not being able to wrestle with and grasp this idea that my kids are in two different circles. And that's difficult for them, and it's probably very, very difficult for you. Now, if you're divorced and you're remarried, now you've got an ex-spouse in their circle, and you've got a new spouse who's in your circle, and then that also complicates it if they've been married before, because now you've got, your spouse has an ex-spouse in their circle, and maybe you've got kids, and now you've got stepkids, and so you can see that divorce and remarriage, while I believe that, God does that and brings people together in those situations, it makes the idea of identifying family more and more difficult and more complicated. All right. So let me just wrap it up this way. Let me go back for just a second, because I want to tell you a story. I was at one of our finer eating establishments here in town. I was actually standing in line at Panda Express one time last year, and waiting there. And a guy comes up and he goes, "Hey," and I love this. He goes, "You're the Marriage Matters guy." I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "That was my wife and I went through that 10 years ago." He goes, "That was so helpful." And I said, "Well, thank you." And he said, "The thing that was," he goes, "I still think about this because it was 10 years ago. I still remember it like it was yesterday." He goes, "When you drew the circle for family," he goes, "that was a game changer for us. That was life changing for us." And I've heard that from a lot of people. And so I hope that it's, this way for you as well. I had a Rebuilders leader actually several years ago, and I knew her and knew her well, and I knew her kids. She had two great kids who were in their mid, late 20s, adult children, and she was single, and her kids were her life, even though they were getting married and on their own, and yet everything about her life revolved around her kids. And I remember when we got done one night with this teaching, and she came to me and she said, "I don't like that. I don't know if I agree with your teaching." I said, "Well, tell me more, what don't you agree with?" She goes, "Because the way you draw the circle, when you draw the circle and our kids are out," she goes, "I'm in the circle by myself. And I don't like that." And I said, "Well, I think that's probably true." And as I observed her and observed her kids, that was the whole problem. Her kids were feeling conflict and trying to separate themselves and feeling, wanting to put up barriers between them and their mom because she was like this overbearing parent. She was trying to keep them in her circle. And I said, "I don't know what to tell you, but I think that that's right." And she goes, "I don't like it." And I said, I get that. I said, "But to be honest, your kids are going to live outside your circle whether you want them to or not. And the question is, are you going to have a good relationship with them or not?" And so think about your family and where you currently are. And what about these circles kind of helps you define where you are, but more than that, to think about where you need to be and what you need to do to get there. So for you to have a healthy marriage really begins with your family of origin, going all the way back. For your family of origin, taking you through the first two stages of childhood, of reinforcing all that God intended them to build into you, and then releasing you into adulthood, and then equipping you for you to take yourself into through that third stage of redefining your family and defining your circles as a family. And so the question as you go to your small groups now is, how did your family do with that? And what impact has that had on your current or your previous marriage? But the bigger question is, what do you need to do now to move yourself towards wholeness? Because the reality is, negative things from your family of origin that have impacted you now were not your fault. They clearly were not your fault. Again, we're not here to blame, but I will say they weren't your fault, but they are your responsibility. Can't tell you the number of times I've said to my sons over things that they go, that wasn't my fault. You know, stuff at school and an assignment, whatever it was. We say, I realize that. It wasn't your fault. But it is your responsibility. And, you know, when it comes to family of origin, somebody isn't going to come along and fix, you know, those things for you. You know, your family of origin can't come back and undo those things that they did or do the things that they failed to do. The negative things from your family of origin that have impacted you now were not your fault, but they are your responsibility.